Chapter 2. We were surrounded by at least 6 pairs of eyes, and I had no idea who the eyes belonged to. We had no idea what kind of world we were in. Besides that, the trees looked familiar and there was fire. We could be surrounded by humans with high-tech weaponry and equipment, or we could be surrounded by a pack of animals ready to tear us into shreds. Or we could be in the midst of a Care Bear camp and we were about to get 2,000 hugs. Sure, we were traveling in a machine that was supposed to deliver us to worlds populated with humanoids, but we hadn't seen any humans besides ourselves in the last 3 worlds we'd been in. We were probably in danger, but the sun was still too low in the sky for me to be able to tell exactly what kind of danger we were in. "We need light," I whispered. I really, really wished that Saul had given me a flashlight. I'd tried the flashlights in the hardware store in the world where we'd picked a Krasis up, but all of the batteries had been dead by then. "Someone grab a lantern and a candle." It was only a second before soft, slick fingers pressed a lantern and candle into my hand.
"Here."
Emma touched the end of the candle wick. Her finger flashed with a blue spark, and the candle began to burn. She took the candle from my hand, jammed it into the lantern, and closed the lantern's glass door. The clearing glowed with soft yellow light as the candle sputtered to life, but it didn't illuminate whoever was behind the eyes.
"Animals would have fled or attacked by now,"
Fila whispered.
"And people would have attacked us by now if they were going to,"
Emma whispered. "I don't feel like standing around waiting for them to come out," I whispered. I rested my hand on the holster of my Glock and raised my voice to about the level of a conversation at a crowded party. "Hey, everyone in the bushes! We could see you there. We don't want to fight or hurt you, but we don't know who you are. Come out and show us your faces so we can talk." The bushes were still. The silence stretched on for long seconds, and I glanced at my watch to make sure that time hadn't actually stopped. After a minute or two, I started to hear bird calls coming from around us. I could identify the hoot of an owl, the conklery of a red-winged blackbird, and the cooing of a mourning dove. But each bird only sang a couple of times. I was pretty sure there was no way that those particular birds would all just coexist with each other in the same small area without constant screaming and mobbing, so I was pretty sure that it was people making those calls.
"Attack calls?"
Fila whispered. She brandished her spear in front of her, and her tail lashed behind her.
"I am ready."
A jay frantically cawed from somewhere in the trees, and then the bushes began to rustle. The 6 gawky teenage boys that emerged all carried wooden bows by their sides and leather quivers of arrows strapped across their bare chests. Their skin was medium brownish pink, but with a slightly ashy cast that suggested a recent emergence from a cloudy winter. Most of them wore their hair in long black braids that fell across their shoulders or down their backs, although one of them had his hair twisted into a ponytail of locks. Their clothes were pretty evenly split between brown leather loincloths that were only a little longer than Fila's and brown leather shorts that came down to their knees. "You're all teenagers," I blurted out. I had been a teenager just a few short years ago myself, but these kids were definitely on the younger side of adolescence.
"Huh? Greetings, honored ones,"
the tallest kid began as he raised his free hand. He had 2 long braids that hung down his shoulders and fringes on the sides of his pants.
"We are sorry that we did not send a more exalted party to come greet you, but we saw you arrive, and we wanted to get here as fast as we could."
"Do you have any wisdom for us?"
blurted out a shorter boy with a single braid and a loincloth.
"You can't just ask the gods for wisdom, Sparrowhawk,"
the tallest kid said to the short kid.
"They give it to you if they think you're worthy."
"Wait, you saw us arrive?" I asked. "What exactly did you see? And why were you hanging out in the woods at 3 in the morning?"
"We were out hunting for meat for our families during the night so that the eye of the Sun Eagle could not see us,"
a long-limbed kid with a single braid said.
"That was when we saw the lightning bolts come out of the clear black sky. We did not see any clouds or smell any rain, so we knew that it had to be a thunderbird coming to bless our tribe. We waited here because we figured that you were getting ready to come out from inside your fort,"
a slightly pudgy kid in a loincloth said.
"I never thought that a thunderbird would be a beautiful woman,"
breathed a kid in leather shorts and a braided leather necklace. He gazed at Emma as she held her sparking finger out.
"Or that an underwater panther would stand by the side of a thunderbird,"
the kid with locks said. His eyes were fixed on Fila.
For two enemies to come together to visit our people, things must be really bad.
This strange bison must be an omen as well, said the long-limbed kid. He wears a skull on his shirt,
the pudgy kid whispered into the tallest kid's ear as he pointed at me.
The sacrificers like skulls, and he's pale like a corpse. What do you think it means?
He came here with the Thunderbird and Underwater Panther, the tallest kid said. He must be a great warrior spirit here to fight the sacrificers and bring terror to them. See, his wife is even one of us.
Acrasis slipped her hand into the crook of my free arm. She had morphed her skin, hair, and eyes to match those of the boys who surrounded us. She had also changed her clothing to a calf-length buckskin dress with an elaborate beaded design of colorful flowers all down the front. So the teenagers with the bows and arrows thought we were spirits. They looked like they were Native American, and their handmade clothes and low-tech weapons suggested that they weren't from a timeline that had developed modern technology. They'd wanted to find the Thunderbird and were willing to accept the Underwater Panther, but their negative association with the sun god seemed pretty unusual for Native Americans, and I wondered if it had something to do with the sacrificers they'd mentioned. I didn't like the sound of the sacrificers, and I wasn't sure if I was ready to fight whatever they were, but I also wasn't sure how well the excited teenagers would take to being disappointed. I couldn't be sure that I wasn't in a universe where the natives had been able to repel the European invasion, and they might not be too happy to learn that they'd actually been visited by a white southern girl, an Eastern European descendant, a cave girl with lower technology than their tribe, and a shape-shifting slime girl who had devoured an entire world. I vaguely remembered that shape-shifting witches were a pretty scary concept to at least one native tribe, and I definitely didn't want to open that can of worms either. I decided to take a cue from Winston Zeddemore and say yes when someone asked me if I was a god.
You're all pretty smart, I said to the teenagers. You figured out exactly what we are. We're from another world, and we all just stopped by for a visit and to see how you guys are all doing down here. The Thunderbird is called Emma. The Underwater Panther is called Fila. The Bison is Floppy. My name is Dave. And my wife here is Acrasis. And you are?
We should take you to the village before the sun is too high in the sky, or the Eagle Lord will wonder why we were out here.
The tallest boy pointed north, then started to walk.
We can make introductions on the way. I am Black Turtle of the Wolf Clan. Little Bear of the Bear Clan, said the pudgy kid. They call me Bear Bear.
I am White Cloud of the Turkey Clan, said the teen in the leather shorts.
He kept glancing back at us as we followed the group of kids.
It is truly an honor.
I'm Little Fox of the Martin Clan, said the long-limbed kid. He raised his hand. I was the one who realized that a Thunderbird had come down from the skies. Everyone else was standing around wondering if a storm was on the way.
I'm a Sparrowhawk of the Lynx Clan,
Sparrowhawk said.
And I'm Tallgrass of the Frog Clan, said the teen with the locks. My grandmother was the last shaman of our village. Did you land when you did because of me? I never thought I had the gift of speaking with spirits, but maybe I was wrong.
If they came to talk to anyone, they probably came to talk to the shaman,
Black Turtle said.
We are lucky that we were the ones to find the spirits, but understanding the wisdom of the gods is Grandfather Day's job.
Shouldn't we take them to the chief first?
Little Bear asked.
She'll probably want to know that there are spirits in her village.
Chief Red Squirrel has to tell everything that happens in the village to the Eagle Lord, right down to how many pots we make a week,
Tall Grass said.
She'll definitely tell him that the spirits came to visit us.
Oh, Lord Tupac won't like that,
Sparrowhawk groaned. Wait, you guys have an Eagle Lord? I asked. And he's named Lord Tupac? That's incredibly cool.
The Eagle Lord is not a friend of the people of the Three Fires,
Black Turtle said.
He's one of the sacrificers. Him and his warriors live in a big mud house north of our village, so they can come marching in whenever they want.
And it's not Chief Red Squirrel's fault that she has to tell the Eagle Lord everything,
Little Fox said.
If she didn't, they'd just take her as a sacrifice, then pick out another chief who they liked better. She's been ruling this tribe since before the invaders were here.
So,
these sacrificers,
Emma began.
They're horrible, Sparrowhawk burst out. They came from the south on their war bison before we were born, and they killed all the men and the women who fought back with their obsidian swords, and they made us build our wigwams right where the deer used to run.
They come into the village all the time and say that they need a sacrifice to the Sun Eagle,
Little Bear said.
Chief Red Squirrel says all they do is push you into a pond, and if you can swim out, then you get to live. But nobody they've ever taken from the village comes back alive.
They cut down all the trees north of the deer run and turned the wetlands into farming fields, White Cloud said. They make us work in the fields growing food that we don't even get to eat. When we harvest it, we have to give almost all of it to the Eagle Lord and his warriors. We barely have enough maize and beans for ourselves.
We're not even allowed to hunt in the forest over here, Little Fox said. Only the Eagle Lord and his friends are allowed to hunt. We're not even allowed to eat the turkeys that we raise. We're just supposed to eat bugs.
We're not really supposed to leave the village either, White Cloud said. Our mothers and grandmothers tell us stories of how we used to travel here to meet with the other tribes and hunt here when the deer ran, have a powwow and celebrate the hunt, and then travel back to our village by the shore of the big lake.
Lake Michigami or Lake Gichigumi? I asked. I was sort of proud that I remembered the native names for Lake Michigan and Lake Superior, and that both names originally just meant Big Lake.
The Big Lake that is in the direction the sun sets, Black Turtle said. The one where the sun rises is Wendat territory, not Three Fires territory. The sacrificers probably took them over, too.
Is that why you said that about the Eye of the Sun Eagle?
Emma asked.
Will the Eagle Lord's warriors do something horrible to you if they find you outside of the village or the fields?
It's the same punishment they use for breaking any of their rules, White Cloud said. They take you as a sacrifice.
Wait, do you really not know about the Sun Eagle? Tallgrass asked. I thought that even all the spirits had to pay tribute to him now. Oh, that's what the sacrificers told us.
Of course they would lie, Little Fox said. When the old chief surrendered to the invaders, they told us that we had lost because our spirits had been fighting at the same time we had been fighting. They said that their Sun Eagle had slain the Great Spirit and forced all of the other spirits to bow to him and accept him as their chief.
They say that when the sun is up, his eye can see everything, White Cloud said.
Sure, Little Fox rolled his eyes in a very familiar gesture of teenage disgust.
They also say he tells all the Eagle Lords every little thing so that they can find and punish the wrongdoers. But I've broken plenty of rules during the daylight without ever being caught.
They say that the people they take for sacrifices feed the Sun Eagle, Tall Grass said. They say that without humans to eat, he'll die and the sun will go out.
We never had to sacrifice people to our sun to make sure it didn't die, Sparrowhawk said. I don't know how a god so weak that he needs to eat people all the time could defeat the Great Spirit. Well, that just doesn't make any sense.
Does your shaman agree with all of this?
Fila asked.
He says that nobody can kill the Great Spirit, Black Turtle said. He says that just because we lost a fight doesn't mean that our ancestors are not with us, or that the nature spirits will not talk to us, or that our guardians do not care for us.
And he was right, Tallgrass grinned. We've been asking for help from the spirits for so long, and you have finally come to help us. Well, now we can attack the city of the sacrificers and slay them all the way they have been slaying us.
Listen, we're only here for a couple of days, I began. But my breath caught in my throat as we stepped into a clearing. One of the things I'd always liked about living right on Grand River Avenue was that I was directly connected to the heart of Detroit. I could drive my beater right off my condo complex driveway, turn left, and head down to Hart Plaza and the Riverwalk to gaze across the river at Canada without ever having to make another turn. My view downtown was so direct that I could actually see the gleaming cylindrical tower of the Renaissance Center rising above the cityscape on all but the foggiest of days. In this world, the Renaissance Center had never been built, but the Straits were clearly still the perfect place for a burgeoning empire to build a city, and the structure that the invaders had built in place of the skyscraper complex told me exactly who they were. Rising far above the trees where the Renaissance Center had once been was a gigantic Aztec pyramid. Well, now we know who the sacrificers are, I murmured. Fucking Aztecs. They must have never had Hernan Cortez in this dimension.
The Aztec Empire,
Emma whispered to me.
Oh, how horrible. Oh, no wonder they call them the sacrificers.
Hey, yeah, these are the guys who carve the hearts out of their victims so their sun god can eat the entrails and drink the blood, I whispered. But let's not tell the kids that. I think they have enough to worry about.
It makes sense that their sun god would be an eagle,
Fila whispered.
Eagles try to trail after my pack when we go hunting, so they can try to feast on the kill. Sometimes I think their big beaks and sharp claws are meant to hurt rivals for their carrion.
We're getting close to the village.
Black Turtle stopped at the edge of the clearing and put up his hand.
It's light out enough that if we try to sneak you across the village to Grandfather Day's hut, someone will definitely see you, and then they'll tell the chief. Or the chief will just see you herself. We'll have to sneak around the edge of the village.
Lead the way, I said. You're the experts here. Black Turtle headed left into the woods, and we all followed behind him. Now that the sun had actually risen and the morning light was seeping through the trees, the forest was starting to wake up. The morning air was alive with the sounds of more birds and bugs than I had ever heard before, and the floor of the forest was filled with tiny multicolored flowers. Flashing feathers and fluttering butterflies flitted to and fro in the thick green canopy of the forest.
Everything is so beautiful and alive, I murmured to Emma.
And I thought the old nature preserve was unspoiled.
I'm a little worried about the human sacrifices at the moment,
Emma whispered back.
What a barbarous religion.
It's not really about their religion. That's just a way to justify their human sacrifice, I replied. I read this book from my anthropology class, Cannibals and Kings, that explained it all. The Aztec Empire had so many people in such a small area that they couldn't keep up with the protein requirements for all of their people. So a bunch of priests came up with the idea of human sacrifice.
So in addition to being torturers and murderers, they were cannibals?
Emma clapped her hands over her mouth.
Oh, no wonder the Spanish felt they had to conquer and reform them. They must have been horrified.
What? I shook my head. Emma, what kind of history books have you been reading?
The Spanish were very pious Catholics, and they came to trade with the Aztecs. When they saw that the Aztecs were performing barbarous human sacrificial rituals, they realized that they had to stop the practice, and the only way they could think of to do that was to slaughter the priesthood and the kings who let it happen.
You know the Spanish were torturing Jews to death at the same time, right? I asked. So it wasn't like they were too creeped out by the idea of killing people for their god. They didn't come there to trade. They came there to steal and kill and take the land like everyone else in Europe was doing at the time. And all the sadistic crap they did to the Aztecs was pretty much as bad as human sacrifice.
Well, they certainly weren't perfect saints themselves, I do agree. But they did end the practice of human sacrifice, you must admit.
I guess that's technically accurate, I muttered. I glanced at the teenagers up ahead to see if they'd overheard any of our history discussion, but we'd fallen behind while we were talking, and the kids were maybe 20 yards ahead of us. Both kingdoms were assholes, but we probably want to stop talking about alternate history while we're around these folks. I mean, their alternate history. For you and me, it's just our history.
I have never known a people who need to feed their gods before,
Fila said in a low tone.
Our gods hunt for themselves.
Acrasis, what's your take on things? I asked. You've been pretty quiet so far.
We are still not sure what a god or a spirit is. We do not have them, but humans seem to think they are very important. Well, it is a good question,
Emma mused.
Great theologians and philosophers throughout the centuries have tried to understand the nature of God and the spirit, but there is really no one single way to answer. I suppose the answer I've always liked best would be that God is a refuge of safety and love, and the certainty that things will turn out all right, and that the spirit is that which moves us to help and love each other. That does not explain why they are fighting and need to eat humans to live,
Acrasis said.
My gods are like my people, but they are made out of different things than we are,
Fila said as she pointed at the pinkish disk of the rising sun.
The sun is a god, and his mane lights up the sky. The wind is a god who runs so fast that his mane brushes against everything as he goes by. The clouds are a goddess, and the rain is the milk that she squeezes out of her teats.
That might be a little closer to what the people we're with believe, I whispered.
Speaking from a strictly anthropological perspective, gods are the personifications of natural phenomena or abstract concepts like the sun or rain or love or war. They're what happens when people start to think that those things have minds like them and can be understood or bargained with just like people.
So, are they real?
Acrasis asked.
The sun is right there.
Phila jabbed her finger at the sun.
Can your eyes even see it? I'm sure that the bear folk think of it as a bear, and the monkey folk think of it as a monkey, but it shines its light on all of us.
Honored spirits, Tallgrass whispered.
The teenager had fallen behind to walk with us, and I realized that the rest of the boys had slowed down significantly.
We thank you for sharing your wisdom with us. The sun is the sun, whether it is a bear or an eagle or something else. But it is also high enough in the sky that the village will have woken up, and we must not let them see you until you have spoken to Grandfather Day.
Point taken, I whispered back. Let's save the theological debate for later, ladies. We quietly trailed along after the teenagers as they led us through the woods, but it wasn't too long before the silence was broken.
Black Turtle!
A woman's shriek pierced the air as a squat little old lady with an elaborately woven wicker basket on her arm hurried toward us. Her two black braids hung down over her shoulders, and she wore a red and black striped poncho over a fringed buckskin skirt. The boys all came to a screeching halt.
Oh, no, it's Auntie Chickadee,
Little Bear groaned. He turned away from the old lady and tried to cover his face with his hands.
She does not look dangerous,
Phila whispered.
What are you doing out in the woods this morning, Auntie? Black Turtle called over to the old lady. The eagle's eye is open. I worry that he'll catch you.
Me?
Auntie Chickadee placed her free hand on her chest as she reached the boys.
I am here to forage for herbs and mushrooms. There is nothing in my basket to tempt the eagle. But you are all armed to hunt. Even if you don't bring home any meat for the village, the eagle might think that you have a tasty bit of flesh for him and haul you off to eat.
We were only carrying these in case a bear or a pack of wolves attacked us,
Little Fox held up his bow.
We were out here to gather herbs just like you, but we heard that the Eagle Lord likes to keep predators in his forest in case he feels like having a little excitement.
You are still just a little fox, and your lies fool nobody.
Auntie Chickadee shook her head. Then she reached out to pinch Sparrowhawk's cheek in the manner of aunties everywhere.
And you, Sparrowhawk, you are such a good tracker and hunter. And yet you brought your brothers home with nothing in their hands but their bows, and far past the time when the eagle first starts to open his eyes. What went wrong with this hunting trip?
But, Auntie, we brought home something better than meat.
Tallgrass pointed at us.
What?
Auntie Chickadee turned around, squinted at us, then rubbed at her eyes.
What am I looking at?
Their spirits, Auntie. White Cloud said. We saw lightning bolts come out of a clear sky, and we went to see what happened. We found a thunderbird standing side by side with an underwater panther, and this great warrior with his spirit bison and his wife.
Hi, I'm Dave. I held up my hand in greeting at Auntie Chickadee. Dave of the Meyer clan. Floppy raised his trunk and flapped his ears. The corners of his triangle mouth curved up a little, and I could swear that he was smiling at being called a spirit bison.
I don't see any birds here besides White Cloud and me.
Auntie Chickadee crossed her arms.
Oh, would you like to see the thunder?
Emma raised her hands, and a blue nimbus began to glow around her palms. Tiny electric bolts started to zap from fingertip to fingertip as her sky-blue eyes shone with an eerie light.
I would be more than happy to show you how this particular bird makes the thunder.
All six of the boys immediately flopped onto the ground on their stomachs and covered their ears.
And just because I am not wet does not mean I don't live underwater.
Phila lashed her tail back and forth behind her. Then she wiggled her tufted cat ears.
But you must be able to see that I am certainly a panther.
I asked the Thunderbird and the Underwater Panther to take the forms of human women so that they wouldn't scare your people too much, I explained to Auntie Chickadee. I wasn't entirely sure what the Thunderbird or Underwater Panther were supposed to look like, but I took a chance. I can ask them to turn back into a huge bird made out of lightning and a giant scary panther with scales and claws and fangs and horns, if you really want, though. You know, if that would make you feel better.
I did not mean to offend you, honored spirits.
Auntie Chickadee backed away, and she fell to her knees and raised her hands in front of her.
I see your thunder, and I see your panther ears and tail and your copper hair. Please forgive me. We have already been invaded once.
Yes, your unmatured offspring told us the story.
Acrasis reached out toward the old woman's bony fingers and clasped them in her hands.
We understand that you have been through great hardship. Your resources have been stolen by competing lifeforms who enforce cooperation with their interests at the expense of yours through the immediate threat of violence and the larger existential threat of ecological catastrophe.
You understand!
The old woman cried, even though it took me a second to parse what the slime woman was saying. She slowly got back up as she clasped Acrasis's hands.
They took everything we have, and they force us to work to the bone to put every scrap of food into their mouths. If we refuse or fight back, they sacrifice us. And then they tell us that if they do not take us as sacrifices, the sun will die.
Yes, that creates a difficult situation for your life forms to prosper.
Acrasis nodded.
Well, I tell you that the sun was just fine when we were dancing for it.
Auntie Chickadee stood back up, let Acrasis's hands go, and brushed the dirt and leaves from her knees.
But your spirits, you know more than we do about what the sun wants and does not want.
The sun certainly doesn't want human sacrifices,
Emma said as the glow around her fingers died.
And neither do any of us. It's a cruel and needless practice, and we're here to put a stop to it.
And the underwater panther agrees,
Auntie Chickadee asked, and then she bowed deeply to Fila.
I mean no disrespect. We all know that you keep the souls of the people who drown in your lake.
I hunger like any other panther, it is true.
Fila curled her lips up into a sardonic smile and bared her fangs.
But I only consume those who fail to respect my power or who pollute the waters in which I live. If your people were more watchful for danger, I would have nothing to eat but the souls of the fish.
I will remember this.
Auntie Chickadee bowed to Fila again. Then she straightened up and clapped her hands at the boys.
You have brought the spirits to us, boys. Why were you sneaking around in the woods? We must take them to the village right away and show them what kind of a feast we can give our honored guests.
Actually, we have an appointment with the shaman, I began. And the boys were just taking us there.
Grandfather Day will not even be awake yet.
Auntie Chickadee straightened her poncho, and then she set off toward what I assumed was the village.
If our boys have been out all night hunting without making a kill, they will be hungry too. Breakfast for everyone.
The boys groaned, and then they began to follow the old lady.
What about the Eagle Lord? I whispered to Tallgrass as he trudged by.
We'll just hope that he doesn't find out,
Tallgrass answered with a solemn look.
Auntie Chickadee will tell everyone in the village that you're here anyway, even if we do sneak you to the shaman's house.
And she's right, White Cloud said.
Grandfather Dave stays up late into the night. He won't be awake yet, and if we do wake him, he'll be grumpy, and he won't tell us anything.
I guess we're having breakfast then, I muttered. I just hoped that a simple visit from the spirits wouldn't be enough to catch the ire of Tupac, the Eagle Lord.